This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay.
Does that work?
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right, everybody. The time is 12:15. I'm going to call this employee assembly meeting to order. Right now, we have a budget presentation from Paul Streeter, the Vice President of Engineering and Planning. So we're going to present. Paul's going to present, and then we're going to leave some time for questions that anybody might have. So with that, I will turn it over to Paul Streeter.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thanks for the chance to be here. I'll get right into it. I'd love to kind of know where you're all from, but I won't take the time to do that. I'll get right into the presentation. I've got a lot of information here. If it's not what you want or if you have other questions, just stop me and ask me, and I'll try to leave time as well at the end. But if there's something striking you that I'm not saying and you're wondering about or trigger a question, please don't hesitate. My hope is that this is some education around where it is that you want. And so if I'm missing the point, redirect me and just answer whatever questions are out there. So let me jump into it then. I'll just start with some summary observations. And I actually was with Employee Assembly a year ago. The observations were somewhat similar a year ago. We're in a financially stable spot right now. We had some financial difficulties coming out of the recession, and a lot of financial difficulties coming out of the recession took a number of years, but I would say where we're at right now, I would say we're stable. We're not flush, but we're not talking about deficits and working out of deficits. The central overall campus budget, as all of you know, is a very large institution. We operate very decentralized, so individual unit budgets could be much more stressed than what I'm implying, and I don't want to dismiss that. But from an overall campus standpoint, we're balanced, and the pot of money that the provost manages from the center, we're in a balanced position on that. And we weren't. 2 years ago, I probably would have said we're getting there, and 3 years ago, I said we still have a significant gap to fill. So we've come out of that. And we've stabilized, I think, the expectations from the colleges on where their funding levels were going to be. Again, a couple years ago, I think they were waiting for the shoe to drop, another shoe to drop on funding levels. And that stabilized. They have multi-year numbers. So the whole relationship, I'd say, stabilized. And as I mentioned, I mean, the budget capacity and flexibility, you're all going to experience it differently depending on what unit you're in. Because we are a very decentralized place, and budgets tend to get managed very locally. So two types of budgets I was going to touch upon both. But just from a language standpoint, when I use the term operating budget, or much of what I'm talking about here is operating activity, for me, that means it's the resources we have on an annual basis. It's tuition coming in, it's state money coming in, it's salaries, personnel, benefits, supplies, those kind of expenses going out. And the operating budget we tend to think about is a one-year budget. So when I talk about the operating budget and show some data, think about that as day-to-day, month-to-month operations of the university, ongoing operations of the university. When I use the term capital budget, and I've got some stuff at the end of this, I'm really talking about major renovation projects. So this is both large and medium-sized facility-related projects or investments in administrative systems. They're the kind of the investments that take multiple years to implement, to execute on it, and are going to have a useful life that's really long. So I'll talk about the capital budget as well. These two intersect, but they are really two different pots of money, and you have to think about it that way, please. So just the budget objectives. I didn't know this was going to scale in. So, where we're coming from, I report, just to kind of put my position in context for you, I report to the provost and to the chief financial officer. So the provost is the academic side of the house, and is really the one responsible for allocating resources on campus and for managing resources on campus. And my role is essentially his staff on that side of the question, the equation for him. And then I also report to the chief financial officer. So Mike Hoff's the provost, Joanne knows the chief financial officer. Joanne's responsible for the financial statements and the financial health of the institution. So if we're spending too much on the provost side, if you will, or spending too much internally, that we're just jeopardizing our long-term financial health, that's a major concern for Joanne. She doesn't get into the mix of how we use the money, just to make sure we don't create deficits or create long-term problems. So I sit between the two of them, if you will, as kind of the balance on those two tensions for the institution. So our priorities is maintain a balanced budget, maintain from an operating standpoint, we've got the, we can afford the salary programs to retain faculty and staff. We invest in deferred maintenance, and we use that term I put on here, academic and housing deferred maintenance. We have facility problems, facility needs, put that way, both in the academic side and in the student side that we need to invest in. One of our objectives is to make sure we've got a predictability in the budget so people aren't getting surprised and units can plan long-term. We're under, as you just popular press would tell you, we're under a lot of pressure to minimize tuition rate increases. We've have had historically healthy increases, and the question about affordability is front and center and internally and certainly in a public and state and federal realms. So next slide, please. So budgeting does start with priorities. Just give you a sense of where the priorities are that we think about. These are the four priorities from the president as she expressed them in her inaugural address last year: academic distinction, One Cornell, educational verb, and civic responsibility. So our budget planning and the investments that the provost and the president are trying to make are geared towards these four objectives. Next slide, please. So just to give you a flavor, to try to put a little meat on this thing, what they mean, academic distinction. When the president and the provost use the term, they're really talking about excellence amongst the faculty, retaining, recruiting faculty, teachers and researchers. Investment in both, you know, anything in the realm of research, scholarship, and innovation, and there are a number of investments going on there. And then Provost talks about radical collaboration, seven different initiatives. He stood up a faculty effort in each of these a couple years ago, and the faculty did report out on these in terms of what would it take. The question really was, what would it take to put us in a world-class leader, either keep us in a world-class leadership position or move us to a world-class leadership position in these seven areas? And Mike put that through the faculty committees in each of the areas to make some recommendations, and we're trying to respond to that with the investments that it called for. So that's in the academic distinction. In the One Cornell area, this is really looking at programs in the intersection across all the campuses, the medical college in New York, Cornell Tech in Ithaca. An educational verb is a really interesting term. It's Martha's way of saying she wants to have some energy in the educational environment, innovation, excitement, and a forward look to it. So educational innovation, there's a Center for Teaching and Innovation, CPI, which is a reorganized program that was a major investment from Mike and Martha last year to stand up. A lot of grant activity out there for faculty to really innovate in the teaching space. Related to this, I would throw in our North Campus residential expansion, the facility improvement that we're doing in North Campus, which will change the student life experience. It'll bring a lot of students who live off campus now back onto campus. And the goal is, long-term goal programmatically, is to be able to house all freshmen and sophomores on campus. And we don't do that now. We don't have that kind of capacity. And then just again in the realm of student support. And lastly, civic responsibility. This is, we'll start with affordability. So this is around tuition and financial aid and making sure that we're accessible to any student who wants to come here. We are dominating. We have very robust financial aid programs. But the reality, the data is that many of our students come from an upper income situation. And the president's goal is to expand the socioeconomic diversity of our student population, not by different financial aid programs, but by different students, more students who need financial aid to come here. So we are making an investment in that in the operating budget to try to enable that, and it will be a priority in the next fundraising campaign. So that's one and two together, and then just a continuing investment in diversity and inclusion is a priority on campus. So moving beyond priorities, here's the numbers, and I'm trying to talk fast. Stop me so we leave time for questions. So this is the budget for the total university, includes Cornell Tech, the medical college, and the IFCA campus. I'm going to go to the IFCA campus in a second, but just want you to get a feel. So we're a $4.5 billion enterprise. That's a big business. $4.5 billion, and if you look at it for a campus as a whole, our single largest revenue source is actually the medical college's physician plans. So the medical college clinicians work at New York Presbyterian Hospital, and the fees they charge for, you know, patient-related fees, surgical fees, et cetera, that revenue comes to us. It largely goes back out as compensation. So there's probably our single largest expense, place of expense would be the practice plan. But our biggest single revenue, campus as a whole, is medical college physician revenues. It doesn't really impact our operation here. They're just a different kind of entity than the rest of the university. When you look at it with the rest of the university, tuition and fees, undergraduate and professional tuition, as well as graduate degree PhD tuition, sponsored programs activity, that's our grant and contract kind of activity, research portfolio. So this is all, the term sponsored programs refers to grants and contracts, external money coming in for us to do some sort of research obligation, deliverable obligation. Investment income, I'll talk about that in a second, but that's money we get from the endowment. So campus-wide, it represents about 7% of the total operating budget. I don't remember the exact dollar amount, but it's in the scale of about $340 million next year. Someone could do the math on that to see if, hold me honest on that, but it's in the scale of between 320 and 350. I just don't remember the exact number. Gifts. So we get gifts from a lot of different, for a lot of different purposes. The gift number that's represented here are gifts that we can spend in current operations. We get gifts, donors give money to us to put buildings up, restricted for the use of buildings. That's not counted here. That's really for, it's not for use in current operations, it's to build a building. We get donors who will give us gifts for endowment. That's not in here because the endowment is a long-term asset. We have the income coming off the endowment, but once a donor gives money for an endowment, we can't touch that gift money. So if someone gives us $50 million for an endowment, we can't touch the $50 million. We can only touch the interest income off of that. So when I use the term gifts here, this is really about donors giving us money, either unrestricted, meaning we could use it for whatever we want, or restricted, but they really want it to go to pay for people, pay for supplies, pay for travel, pay for programs that happen day-to-day, month-to-month. That's what that number represents. Why don't we jump to the next slide and just talk about the campus for a second. So the total operation on the IFCA campus is $2.4 billion. And the pie looks a lot different. Take that physician piece out of it, and now we're really dependent on tuition. And one of the challenges facing us as an institution is we're becoming more and more dependent on tuition. So we have, if you were to compare this pie against other institutions, other Ivy institutions, so we are in an elite rich institutional status. I don't want to imply anything different, even though we operate very tightly. We're at a rich institutional status. If you put us against peers, our pies would actually look fairly different. We have more slices of the pie than a lot of our peers do. A place like Princeton, their slice of this investment income is well over 50%. They just have a very large endowment. Their ability to rely on investment income, which provides a lot of relief, you don't have to put the pressure on tuition or you can have really aggressive financial programs, is different. We've got a very diverse set of revenues, but the one increasing the fastest is tuition. Our state money, state and federal appropriations, this really supports the contract colleges. We get about $120 million from the state. That's been flat since 2012. And between 2008 and 2012, we lost on the scale of about $35 million on that. So we took a huge hit in the recession, and it's been flat, and we don't think it's going to change over the next probably 4 or 5 years. Just assuming Cuomo gets reelected, just philosophically, we don't think that's going to change. Sales and service is largely housing, dining, campus store, true enterprise operations. We have a lot of internal billing that feels like an enterprise, but it's just moving from one unit to another. That's not in this number. This is money coming from some external, a student giving us cash in the door, not us pushing cash around the university. So this is really housing, dining, campus store, rent and contracts, again, gifts for operations, investment income, and tuition and fees. And then other sources are things like, just to go to that, think of the Statler Hotel, the vet hospital. They're service organizations. They really do generate cash, but they're part of the academic initiative. So we don't call them pure enterprise. It's not why they exist. They're not here to make us money. They're here to provide a program for students to learn. So let's go on and look at the, and as I mentioned, tuition and fees. We the number I'm showing of 46%, this is a gross number, so I mean that's the sticker price times the number of students. The reality is we don't take in that much cash because we have very generous financial aid programs. So our financial aid is really a discount, it's a price discount off of the sticker price. So if I'm a student with financial aid, I might get charged whatever tuition is, $55,000. But I might get a package that says at the end of the day, I only have to pay cash at $35,000. The only cash we, the $55,000 is actually in this number, but what we net is only $35,000. So on a net basis, tuition and fees net of financial aid, as the note says up on the right, is 33% of our revenues. And that's growing. That's up about 4 or 5% from about 5 years ago. So growing dependency on tuition. If you look at the expense side, we're people in space dominated organization. This financial aid here, we for reporting purposes, we call it an expense. It really is a price discount. But when you leave it in the budget, people in space represent about $1.6 billion of the total budget. So space being utilities, maintenance, what it takes to maintain our facilities and run our, more to run our facilities than really I would say claim that we could maintain them. We don't put enough into truly maintain. But it's that, it's utilities, it's the day-to-day maintenance of running the organization. And then people and benefits. We're a very large organization between staff and faculty, and I'll show you some numbers on that. But that's our largest expense. So again, about two-thirds of it, but if you took out the financial aid, which really not cash out the door, this people in space becomes about 80% of our budget. Before going here, I'm going to go back because I understood from walking in Virginia there might be a question on endowments. So can we go back to the slide? Let me talk about this slide on endowment because this is something that I don't think is always well understood. And if I don't hit the mark here, stop me. So when we talk about endowment, and I say we're a really rich institution, we are. We have over $6 billion of endowment, of invested money. But that money can't be touched. We can't invade that principle. It has to sit here and be invested, and we get the interest earned off of it. So by policy, this is one of the biggest things that trustees are responsible for, because this is the long-term health of the institution, is making sure we have an endowment that can support a lot of faculty positions, a lot of programs. It's a significant part of our budget. By law, if the donor gives us money and says, I want this going endowment, we can't invade that principle. There's all sorts of legal terms around it, but that's the corpus. We can't invade that. All we get is the investment income. So you might see and read about, you know, large gifts to endowment. We get the investment income off of it. And we tend to think we get about 4.5% on an annual basis. We're going to get about 4.5% of that investment income. Now you might hear that we had investment returns last year. I don't know if it's been public, made public yet, but last year's investment performance was over 10%, at least the preliminary number I heard. We don't spend 10% a year. 2 years ago, we had a minus 3%. So what we spend, we've got to buffer these things. Some years are good, some years are poor. Our target is to spend about 5% in total of money's coming off the endowment. Some of that are some fees we use to pay for the investment function. So what we get for program is about 4.5%. That's what the big win on is the endowment that comes in at $10 million, you know, we'll get whatever, 4.5% of that, $450,000 off of that once it's up and performing. All the money, the $6 billion, all endowment, all gets packaged as one big pool, like your, you know, mutual funds and retirement program. It's one big asset that gets invested in lots of different ways. But we think about $6 billion generating income at about 4.5% rate to pay for, whether it be faculty positions, financial aid, or various programs. So when you hear big numbers or read about big numbers in the Chronicle about it, it's all good news. It doesn't change our operating budget that quickly because we're getting just roughly 4.5% a year. Please.
How does that 4.5 compare to other schools with similar endowments?
Yeah, great question. We're all paying out in the same range. Most endowments are in kind of a 5% type targeted total payout, and 5% is the number that we target in total. I'm just subtracting some fees out of that when I say the 4.5. Investment performance, so our 10% versus other institutions, in all honesty, for much of the past decade, we were lagging in the performance realm. We did not perform as well as peer institutions. So our investment returns were not as good. And we were paying out much more than 5%. So the idea of an endowment is that you're going to perform above the rate of you're going to spend. If you spend 5% and inflation's 3%, long term you better be earning more than 8% if you're going to protect the value of the endowment long term, because you've got to cover for the cost of inflation. And we, for many years, we were spending more than we were actually making, so we were losing money on it. But our long term position, that's changed. We had 10.5% return next year. This year, I think it's 10.5%. A couple years ago, it was a -3. We're trying to stay steady at paying out 5%. And that helps us live, you know, kind of buffer the ups and downs of this.
One of the first screens, it spoke of having predictable budgets.
Yep.
The endowment payout last year went down by 6%.
Yep.
The endowment payout for this current year went down by 4%. The writing program, I have a staff of 12. We have an endowment account, and it pays 85% of all the money in that account goes towards salaries.
Yeah.
Minus 6%, salaries go to 2.5.
Yeah.
Minus 4, salaries go to 2.5%. So the question is, if I'm trying to predict for the next 4 years,
yep.
You know, I'm thinking minus 2% for the next year, like, 0 the year after that, and maybe 2% after that?
Yep. No, it's a great question, and I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. I expect that next year is going to be a slight decrease again. So we've been spending out, where I said our target is to spend out at 5%, we've been spending 5.6%. Yeah. We've been overspending, and we've got to right that ship.
So if I'm making a prediction, and I'm just having a wild guess prediction,
yep.
You know, if I say 2% positive or 2%, because that's a huge difference.
It is a huge difference. And this change in policy is having a large effect on units that are really dependent on endowment funds, largely dependent on endowment funds. So the reality, though, is I expect that it will go down a little bit more next year. And then I think, I don't remember the percentage. I think are we paying out 248 now a share? Do you remember the share rate? So I think it might go down to, in the scale, we don't have the number set yet, don't hold me to it, but in the scale of 244, in that scale. And then our modeling says it should start coming back up. Now, a performance, but coming back up, it's probably going to come up at a rate between 2.5% and 3% if things were steady. All that depends on performance. If we have multiple years of 10% return, the picture will look a lot rosier. If we have multiple years of 3% return, the picture will look worse. So it really just does depend on this performance issue. We do that. So does that help on endowment? Explain what that is, or any questions around that? It often is a confusing topic.
You said that last year the gain was 10%. I just did a bunch of reports with our principal amounts, and the amounts rose by, for 17, the amounts rose by 3.3%. So the value of my shares of Cornell from in 1 year rose by 3.3%.
Gotcha. Okay. Exactly. So what's the difference between the two of those? So would you say the 3.3? I'm just not sure
the value, what the value of the principal account on January 1st, 2017, the value on June 30th, 2018, 3.3%. It went up on three different accounts.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to reconcile the two. Investment return performance as reported to the trustees a month ago was in the 10% kind of realm. That was a period, so that period of measure was July 1 of 2017, fiscal year, July 1, 17 to June 30, 18. Yeah, so it definitely measures, your, it matters the point of measure. If you're picking a point in mid-year, if you set January, it will affect those numbers significantly. So the point of measure I was referring to was a fiscal year, July through a June window. And I don't know if that explains it.
July through June.
Yep, that's the end. So I don't know how to reconcile your comment with what I believe the investment return is. No, I can assure you that because it gets audited like crazy, the value is the right value, whatever that value, the per share value is. So that 10% got to be reflected in there someplace, that kind of return. But I'm going to look when I go back. I can't answer it off the spot, and I apologize if I'm just not thinking of something. Yes, sir.
I have a question about the expense line. I don't know where they will come.
Yeah, please. Yep.
Could you move the two lines open? I want to go back.
Oh, okay.
My question is, there was a pie chart. Where on that list is IT included on the IT list? So is it a general expenses? Is it an other? Where on that chart was that?
Yeah, so the people are going to be here. Mm-hmm. All people are here. And no matter what your work is, faculty or staff, no matter what area. So the people, the benefits costs are here. The cost of subscription services or licensing, kind of the ongoing maintenance of the network and tools and vendors that support it are here in general expense.
Yeah.
And if you're talking about something like the Workday system, both Workday licensing, Workday is a subscription service, so the licensing is here. If we were talking about the Qualy system, with the financial system, which is not a licensed system, we actually made an investment. It's not in here because that's part of the capital budget. Does that help?
Yeah. The one thing I guess I was looking for some advice for you is IT has grown in industry as regarded as a cost center. So it's like the IT doesn't make any money. The units that all use IT, everybody has part of life. So over time, sort of like gotten to this funny spot where we're generally told in our top three priorities, one of them is always cut costs for IT, which there's a lot of efficiencies, you know, buying printers is always the same thing or different things, software licensing, things like that. And considering that most of the university works because of IT, do you think there's any advice you can give on how to start maybe changing the language around, let's look at IT for cost cutting and more toward like understanding that this is a part, so it's like a, not only the cost of doing business, but it's a little bit more prominent than that. It's
yeah.
Sort of like we all,
it's part of the structure.
Like you don't really say like, well, let's just like turn off the electricity for like the month of the university.
No, it's a great observation. Yeah, IT is very much part of the infrastructure of running the place. I would say that across many of the support functions, it's hard, but there is something that the IT is closer to a utility than something else. I mean, it's a necessary commodity in many, at a foundational level. The language on it, it's a great observation, and I think you're accurate on the way the language has been. I wouldn't dispute that. And the intent on the cost cutting, that part of the language, is not one of trying to erode that as a commodity. It's just making sure that as the whole cost structure of the IT environment continues to evolve as the technology evolves, it evolves. And so I think it's more, the language is intended to be focused on making sure that we're most effective and efficient in that realm, not just cutting for the sake of cutting. But it's a great point, and I will be sensitive to that to the extent I can influence it.
Okay, great.
Other questions on any of this? No, I keep doing that too.
Just thinking about, going back to the 1.0.
Yep.
How do you sort of connect that with the decentralization that have limited or different budgets to support sort of like university level benefits and offerings that aren't maybe accessible at other levels because of limited budgets? And so, I mean, I don't quite understand what the 1.0 encapsulates and what it's trying to say. And I'm speaking to the staff.
Yep.
I know that the faculty had huge investments in faculty development, but it has felt like staff since that recession has been constricted rather than grown and asked to do more with less. And so I want to know is there room in the center back to the operating budget for the university
It's a great question. So my answer is yes, but it's a lot more complicated than that. What we have, we're a really decentralized place. Our challenge, in fact, is around multiple efforts standing up around the same thing. So do I personally believe that there's opportunity to do that? I do. The challenge on it, though, is if we don't have the capacity to be adding things in the support realm of the university. We just don't. Our revenues are moving on a scale of about 2.5% in total year to year. So all these revenues, all the pie charts, to get down to it, we're not growing really fast, but the needs are. So we have got to be, there's going to be a constant cost pressure around that. We're just not going to be flush with money at any time soon. So we can't afford to do something on a decentralized basis and try to put some sort of connected program on top of it. It's one or the other. We can't afford to do both. So I do think there is space to try to do something that cuts across units or opportunities in the staff realm on how we do things. But there is a trade-off. We can't both do it locally and then add something on top of it. And that's the challenge we have as an institution. Of how do we manage our staff support activities, and there's a tension there of where the money's controlled. We're really decentralized. So units have a lot of ability to think about that, and to plan out what they need locally and deliver on that really effectively. And the center doesn't have a lot of flexibility to come in and say, well, this might be, let's connect this dot and do something a little bit differently. To provide some opportunities, so we don't have that kind of money if it's additive. But we can trade off. I don't sure if I'm hitting because I'm seeing the puzzled look on your face.
I do understand. Yeah, I think I hear what you're saying. But the effect of this is that there's uneven access across the university to benefits that the university claims to be offering because they're dependent on supervisor.
I got you. I don't see where you're going. Yep.
And so, is there a way to make some equality there because of the differences in budget? I mean, I work in the IMR school, which is, as you know, some of the contract colleges in the state are no longer giving us what it used to. And so there were those restrictions, but that may not be you know, the same restriction that applies in a very well endowed human. And so, is there a way to ease this out for the staff? I think at the faculty level, you know, the, I don't think the same restriction or, you know, limitations are.
Yeah. There's not an easy way to balance that out. A lot of those issues are not financial issues. A lot of those issues are, it's a workload issue. It's a supervisory attention. This is not giving you my opinion on it. This is a lot of those are where local units and how they prioritize work. And how they prioritize giving, you know, people access to the benefits. I'm not sure if you're talking about things like wellness program or if that's kind of the space that you're talking about.
Employee degree program.
Employee degree program. Yep. So there's not an easy way to do that because there isn't an easy way. If a unit walked in the door and said, we just can't offer these things, we need more money, if that was the solution to offer that, yeah, we could have that kind of question. Nobody walks in the door to say we can't offer this stuff. So from a standpoint of, to the extent you would look to the center to say even out this playing field in some way or provide more money or shift money around so it's a more level playing field, the question doesn't even surface in some way. It's got to surface for us to deal with it. It surfaces at a very individual level, but from a unit saying this is what we need to level that off, we don't get that kind of question. So if that question arose, we probably could, but it would take it if ILR were on this front of saying, what we really need here is give me five more staff and this is what we're going to, give me the funding for five more staff and now we can provide that. At least you can have a conversation about it, but that's not where these things tend to go. I'm not saying we would fund it or we would do it, but we'd at least be able to think about it. And the question doesn't surface that way. And that's where I kind of come back to, you know, again, personal opinion, I wouldn't say it, I've studied it in some manner. I think it's got to start at a local unit level of thinking about how do they level that and how do they prioritize. We can't keep doing more with less. We have to do less. And somehow prioritizing that. It's worth, yeah, I think within your unit. I don't know if it can meet at the institutional level, that's a much harder question because we would turn as an institution quickly if this poses that, look, this is a situation, we're going to turn back to ILR and say, well, what's going on? Why do you need this? How do you think about it? How are you being prioritized? We won't just put, there's not enough resources to move around, but we wouldn't take from engineering to give to ILR without really understanding that issue deeply. So every unit is challenged. No unit is sitting in a flush position. I'm on campus. There are certainly differences, but no units in a flush position. I think they're in a relatively stable. Now, the more you go down, like Bruce's example around endowment, that clearly has been an unstable pathway. I recognize that. So when I say unit, I'm really talking at the college or divisional level, not at a department or program level. I hope that helps. Yes, sir?
I just want to make a comment on that. There might be another way to think about it, and that is taking vacation, those things are all taken care of in the budget. And however that works, the individual units don't end up paying for that. And having something like the employee degree program covered by a separate fund that if someone from a unit takes employee classes, that should be covered by benefits so that their department shouldn't feel the loss or feel the need to discourage somebody from taking. I mean, I've had that experience, and it's not uncommon that either from a standpoint of time or one thing or another, there's pressure to not be careful to take advantage of those things fully. So it's essentially, saying, just like you can take vacation, you can take, you know, 3 years of credit per semester.
Sorry. Let me use your question to go to more internal budget. So I've been talking about, let me just go through a couple slides, then I'll get right back to this.
Well, I was trying to just say, look at a top-down approach.
Yep. Let me just share some data really quickly, and then I get back to this question. I'll never come back to it. Just I wanted to share with you staffing trends for the last decade. You can see
the significant reduction that occurred between 2007 and 2012, that was the heart of the recession. A lot of staff departed in that manner at that point. If we actually looked at this in 2010, I think we would be down closer to 700-800 staff, and then it started coming back up. Over the last 5 years, we've been growing on both the staff side and the faculty side. This is campus-wide staffing numbers, Ithaca campus only.
Do you want to go back to enrollment trends or move forward?
Oh, did I go past that one? Yeah,
if
we go back just one.
Based on the conversation.
And the other thing, where I said we're becoming more tuition dependent, you can see on the undergraduate side what the growth has been over the last decade. Our undergraduate student body has grown by roughly 10% in the last 10 years. That's significant. And it's just been happening somewhat gradually.
But I think the last time you spoke, there's targets for growing the student body.
Last time I spoke, I probably talked about growing by 1,100
per year.
That was the 1,100 in total.
Okay.
What we've evolved since then, we've now set a target of 50, once the North Campus housing project finishes, our target is to be at 15,800 students and stop. This growth here that has occurred, I would say it was unplanned. We didn't have a target of being at 14,900 in 2007. It's just been growing to what we thought what the colleges wanted and what they could support. We've now set, from the president, the provost, have set a target of 15,800 and stopping at that point. So we have, we'll probably be at about 15,000 when it gets measured this fall. We have about 800 more to go from where we are this fall. So I just wanted to mention both the master's degree and the undergraduate are growing, and you can keep going.
Back to
what else? And then just the tuition, I just, interesting, the sticker price on tuition, so that's the published tuition rate. We've been under 4% over the last 4 years. Might not feel like a big claim. It was the first time we were under 4% in about 50 years. So at least the right direction. We will be bringing this down over the coming years. It's a priority of Martha's. It's a priority of the trustees. So that's going to be coming down. But the cash in the door is really after financial aid. This is what we really net. So when I said our operating budget's moving by about 2.5% a year, it's because of this, not because of the sticker price. After financial aid, we just don't get the cash in the door. So what we net from undergraduate tuition is about 2.6% right now. Okay, next slide, please. So budget models, back to so everything I've talked about is the university budget, cash in the door from outside and cash going out the door. Then there's the issue of how do you distribute the resources internally. And then that term is, we use the term budget model for that. The budget model doesn't create new resources and doesn't create more spending. It sets how we distribute the money internally, which goes, I think, to your question, sir, around who's controlling what in here. So I do want to emphasize that point, because when we were changing the budget, for those who've been around for a half dozen years, we changed to a new budget model at the same time we were trying to deal with a deficit. People conflated the two issues. The budget model didn't create a deficit, didn't create any of the deficit. It redistributed it, but it didn't create anything. So the budget model that we are operating on pushes the resources out to the units. So majority of resources go to the colleges, the revenue producing units. So if you think of students as revenue producing, campus life has housing and dining revenue producing, colleges have students, that's revenue producing. Most of the revenue goes to the colleges, and then folks in my kind of office, central administrative office, or the provost or the president, we are an overhead that gets billed out against that revenue. So there's not a pot of money when we say fund it centrally. When we fund things centrally, we're really just going to charge the colleges indirectly for it. We might socialize it in some manner and take away a little bit of the direct visibility on something. They're going to pay an overhead cost rather than I'm going to pay for employee degree program explicitly. And it might change the way they think about that. So I'm not dismissing your comment at all. But I just want to clear that we don't have a pot of money we're sitting on centrally. But we could if we were in a different budget model, but the budget model we are operating on, reflective of two things, but largely our decentralized nature, and the others our state relationship.
forces us this way.
As the years go by, you do make allocations, getting the staff to be more educated is like a good goal.
Yeah.
The way to make that even is maybe something that's a good problem. That's sort of all
I wholeheartedly agree. And we've tried it at times. That has been a direct cost to the colleges. I think we now we build that out as a shared cost to the colleges. So it removes some of the specific, you know, Paul's taking a degree, this is going to cost me. It removes that element of it. But eventually, if someone in the college takes a, or the unit takes a degree, it kind of gets built out. So budget model is an internal distribution. The model we operate on, and there are, you know, choices, different models you could operate on. But we operate on one where it's decentralized. We push the resources out, and then the costs go follow the resources. And again, two reasons why we do that. Historically, we're a very decentralized organization. And the fact is, on the contract college side, there's a very hard line. State money legally cannot be used on the private side of the university. So we can bill for services across that divide, but we can't just push money and call it one big envelope as the institution and tell the state, trust us. We have to maintain some lines there. So the model we have brings the accountability that we need to with the state around how we manage resources across the contract colleges. It gets fuzzy, no denying it gets fuzzy, but that's why we've erred on that side then. Some model that says just put it all in one big pot.
So just out of curiosity then, are the state tuition fees reflected in the figures?
Are the state tuition fees reflected in this? Yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. And both the resident rate, which is lower, and the non-resident rate, which is equivalent to the Indelza.
Forward.
How am I doing on time? But so I will end it here, and I should have talked about capital. We'll go really quick. So what I just said on budget model, this is just a chart. And I know Hayes is going to send out the slides afterwards, but when you look at it, the orange and the blue are simply denoting where resources come when they come in the door. So what happens on tuition, for example, it says it goes to the provost. We just pool it, and then we distribute it back out to the colleges. So the colleges, it's a shared resource. We hold 10% of it, essentially, so we tax a little bit to give the provost some money. The majority of it goes out to the colleges based on a formula. Same thing with the state money. The provost is responsible for allocating the state money. So in first order, he or she, the provost, gets that money and then decides how much goes to the four contract colleges. But we don't hold it internally. I'll go on to capital budget. Just quickly talk about, so capital, again, was referring to major building renovations, major system investments that are going to have a useful life for quite a while. So how we fund these things, usually multiple funding sources, often philanthropy. So if you think of building Gates Hall, we built Gates Hall because we got a lot of money as gifts to be able to do that. But those gifts are restricted. Usually someone putting a name on a building or contributing to the building, it's telling us you can only use that money for a building. We can't use it for anything else. We're occasionally borrow money. So the North Campus project, we're borrowing money. Just think of it like, you know, building a house, a mortgage on a house. We're taking out $250 million of debt, and the student housing fees are going to pay that off over time. On the contract college side, the state provides monies on the scale of, you know, $30 million a year for different projects. How MBR is getting renovated right now, it's with a state investment. And state owns a lot of facility. For those who don't know, our contract college side, the majority of our buildings on the contract college side are actually owned by the state of New York. Not 100%, but majority of them are. And then there is some money set aside from the operating budget. So units do save, and we save for renovation projects, which usually is not on the scale of a full building renovation, where it's going to cost $60, $80 million to do that. Things on that, so we need some investment from outside. But from a budget standpoint, important to recognize the resources that go for facilities largely are interchangeable with paying for salaries or paying something else. So I get the question often of saying, well, you could afford to do the Gates renovation, but you've got to cut staff. Well, the monies aren't transferable. Most of the money is not transferable. Certainly anything that's gift funded is not, and anything that's debt funded is not, and anything state funded is not. It's usually just our internal share. Yes, ma'am.
Did I hear at one point that if someone gives money for a new building, at this point they also have to give money into the down to the building maintenance so that she does invest it unfunded.
It's a goal. It's not a policy. Okay. Yep. Not a policy, but it's definitely a goal. And we are trying to exercise more control over saying no if we can't afford the ongoing operation. Really hard thing to do. So I would say depending on the project, we make that goal more firm. There's one in conversation now that I'm aware of in which it's a clear expectation that if we don't get the endowment, our intention is not to go forward because the unit can't afford the additional operating costs. So there are places where it will get applied really firmly, and other places that it might not. But it really depends on how well we think we could cover those if there are going to be additional utilities and maintenance costs. So it's a goal, not a policy. I really want to. I'll leave this up there, and I'll just take questions. I don't want to cut off the chance to hear what's on your mind. Yes, sir.
You can go first. I'll go after.
Okay. So I just had I'm curious, how much bargaining do you have, for instance, when it comes to benefits? Is it you, like the budget office, who's going to bargain with these, like, insurance companies? Because that's a major expense, you know, how much bargaining is happening there? You have control, so there. Sometimes the providers are setting the prices, and just, you know, they're kind of monopolizing the market.
Yep. So human resources would be the office responsible for it. So it's in their domain. And they do manage those programs. Now, how much control? They would say they exercise as much as they think they can. But certainly a lot of it's going to be health costs. So negotiating, let me step back. We're large enough, we self-insure a lot of our programs. So something like the health program, that's actually a self-insured program. It means we use our institution money. We don't have an insurance policy standing underneath all the insurance costs. We have an insurance administrator. So Aetna might be the administrator and would manage claims and everything. But at the end of the day, if they pay out $20 for a claim, that $20, we're actually funding it institutionally. So we self-insure a lot of that. But the construction of the program that says, are we going to pay out $20 or $25? Are we going to reimburse this on prescription or that on prescription? That's all managed by HR. And so to the extent there's contracts underneath that with vendors, they do negotiate those contracts. I can't speak to specifically how much latitude they have on it, but we can swap stuff in and out of that. If, you know, for some reason they don't like a particular vendor, they certainly have, we're not mandated in any way of using a particular. But it's really the construct of the program. And in places like health and things of that sort, depends on the health of our population and the size of our population that drives that off. Benefits right now are at about 35% on top of salary. So think of a dollar for salary, our benefits runs about 35% on top of that. Yes, ma'am. Or I'm sorry, I'll come to you next. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
No, just on that same topic. Contract college benefits is state funded, right?
Yes.
So that's not a Cornell expense.
It is not. It's not a direct expense. It's part of the reason why we haven't seen any increase in state funding. So when I say, when I say we haven't seen an increase on state funding, we haven't seen an increase in cash coming to us. At the state level, their benefits costs have been going up, and they keep funding that for us. So if I were as a state official talking about Cornell, and I made the statement I made earlier, they'd say, you're clearly wrong. We've increased funding for state because we're paying for your benefits, and the benefits keep going up. So I misspoke. I was too casual in the way I said it. We haven't gotten money for salaries. The state covers the benefits, and benefits costs have gone up, and they keep covering that.
Roger, so from a message aside, then Cornell is responsible for only 100 and not 135% of person's employment cost.
Yeah, our budget. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. We actually cost enough. In terms of salaries, then.
In terms of that benefits piece is not on our budget. It impacts whether we get more state money. I mean, from the state, looks at it and says we give Cornell money in two forms. One of it we actually move right to campus, and one of it we put over here in accounts to pay the benefits. But if you're sitting at the legislature level or the governor level,
It's both pots of money that they're funding.
Yes.
But in our budget, you're absolutely right. In our budget, we don't pay that. Not on all positions, but on most positions in the contract colleges, we don't pay that 35% directly.
That's what the plan that the benefits and the
yeah. That is part of the difference in this. Resources have been, been in this conversation around the budget model implementation. How do you balance that? We're not starting at day zero. So from my standpoint, I've been involved with that question of how do you sort that out. I get endowed colleges say, but a dollar, you give me a dollar, it's not going to go as far as you give Cal's a dollar, ILR a dollar. And I shrug my shoulders and I say, but that's what it is. I can't change the rules on it. And we have evolved to where we're starting right now. We have, the budgets are what they are from a historical level. We're not starting the university brand new. So where we are staffed and the amount of staff that a contract college budget might be able to support because they don't pay for benefits, we've evolved to that over time. And we can't change, we can't redistribute on that front. We'd be dramatic shift.
The confusing part to me is the One Cornell fund.
One Cornell means, it's first from an academic standpoint. So hard to internalize from a staff standpoint. One Cornell is largely from an academic standpoint. It's bridging, there's a lot of synergy, potential synergy across from a research standpoint between the medical college and up here and between Cornell Tech faculty and up here. So think about it from that standpoint, faculty working in the same domain or related domain and trying to bridge those gaps. So that's what One Cornell means. And the other piece that it means from two other dimensions, it means it from a student dimension, the students being able to take advantage of both being here residentially on a rural campus, but having opportunities that might come from being, to have an access, different kind of access to an urban campus. So, whether that be internships or externships, that kind of thing, or just student experiences, being able to have a class that gives them that opportunity, some sort of experience. And then the third front, the third dimension is on the extension front. We're the only institution in the, certainly the largest institution in New York State that has a big influence both at upstate and downstate. And so take our service mission, formal part of our mission as an institution in the extension area, arena, particularly in the contract colleges, it's serving that. We serve both rural and urban environments. And being able to think about that and how we do that, what are the common, what are differences, and how do you influence public policy on that, that's part of the One Cornell. So the One Cornell is very much an academic framework.
Yeah.
Hey, yes.
So thank you so much for coming here and answering these questions. I think it helps to create a sense of transparency between the budget office and the constituents at large. My question is looking at the enrollments from 2007 to 2017, seeing that enrollments have increased by 3,600, while inversely the staff has decreased by about 328. How does the university kind of try to think about this increase in the enrollment population and also the decrease in staff? Is there some sort of right-sizing of this, or is this something that happens at the college student level?
I wouldn't say there's any plan to right-size from this moment, but we have built it, what the president has asked us and we built last spring was a 10-year budget model that says if we really... Here's where we're at. If we build out 10 years and think about the revenue side of it, what's our 10-year revenue picture looks like and where do we spend that money? How do we spend that money? In that sense, I'd say we're not looking at a significant investment in staff to somehow right size, if I use that term. We're kind of assuming we are where we are and we don't want to change from where we don't want to go down from where we're at. So it's maintaining a stable point. The pressure that staff, very, very real pressure staff feel, I'm not trying to dismiss it, is not going to come from a financial standpoint. We don't have that kind of capacity. Given the other priorities of where the president provost want to invest, we don't have the flexibility to put a large amount more money, increase staff levels significantly. So it comes down to a very local decision of how units prioritize their use of money. and we push that out to the deans, have that responsibility in the colleges, is to think about what's the balance of support they need versus faculty they need and the student opportunities. So no, that tension is going to remain in the system. I don't want to mislead in any way.
Okay. Any more questions? And also please keep in mind that if there are any additional questions afterwards, maybe you can forward them to me, and then I can forward them to Paul to answer if you think of anything after the conversation.
Yeah, and I extended this. Hey, I mean, I'd come back if you guys want to talk about some other element of this or have some questions about prompted some thought or whatever. I'd much rather have dialogue around it. So.
All right. Other questions? Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for supporting me on the assembly. I don't get thanked enough a lot. Well, thank you. It's important, and it's a big role. I'm glad we have this kind of opportunity. I think the way you represent, the knowledge you have, I think really helps the rest of the staff. If you've got to feel some sort of understanding, better understanding than much of the staff population. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. So I want to go over a call for late additions to the agenda. Does anybody have any late additions to the agenda? Okay. Does anyone else need an agenda packet? Hello.
I don't know if we're going to have a committee report, but yeah. The retirement plan looks like committee members are reporting, and I am the rest of that.
Okay. So I will see if we have any time within the last. Okay. For an update. Let's move on to the approval of the minutes. Is there any dissent to the minutes from last EA meeting? Okay, all right, with no thanks, we will go ahead and approve those minutes. Business of the day, we just had Paul Schrodekamp update on the R1 and R2. So both are the first resolution to approve the budget, and then the second resolution to change the committees from to 7 from 10 has been forwarded to the president. She is enthusiastic to see what the results are at the end of this, of this fiscal year to see how this change in the committees will impact the work that we do. So no negative feedback from that from the president. I don't know if Terry is available to maybe give us an update on the president's address to staff. Hi, Terry.
Hi. See me? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Hey. So everything is going well. Food and venue are all A-okay, ordered, and food is ordered. We're all set for Klarman Hall and all set for our live stream. Our communications are out the door for the most part. We'll be doing some follow-up on Facebook and some follow-up via email through Paw Print Flash and through the Career Life and Paw Print newsletters. So I think everything is pretty much on track. Andrea's been working hard and is coordinating with Hey and I on the remarks, the presentation of the appreciation award. So I feel like we're good to go on that. The plaque is in production. I don't know, what else? I would say everything is good. If you haven't responded yet to Pilar's doodle poll for volunteering, the different volunteer jobs, please do so. If you can do that by the end of the day today, that would be super great. Tarek, yes?
Yeah, I had a question about that. I tried the poll. There was only one job capable of checking out. So I don't know if that's
there. Yeah, I had the same issue. I can go to Pilar and she said, well,
Try again. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Okay. It wasn't working.
Yeah. 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 So now, assume there are more choices.
Oh. Okay. Well. So you weren't even seeing multiple jobs, or you?
I saw all of them, all the jobs, but I was only able to click one box.
Okay.
So if you click one box.
if you can try again, that would be great. If for any reason it's not working, throw it out the window and just let's do it via email. you can email Pilar directly, and we'll get it sorted out. I apologize for that, but ideally I want to have everybody sorted out and assigned to something by the end of the week so that we can send out an assignment list to the members' email list on Friday. That way everybody knows what they're doing. and if you haven't gotten your shirt yet or your name tag, I think Pam was going to bring those.
So,
you got them. Okay.
Yay.
So everybody's all set.
Is the expectation to wear those, Carrie, at the event?
I'm not going to mandate that, but I'll wear mine. So, I mean, I think it would be nice for us to sort of stand out and wear our name tags. Of course, if you're presenting, you know, I don't know if Craig or Hey, like, if you're presenting, I think that's a different situation. You know, wear what you feel comfortable with. But anybody that's just in attendance volunteering, I feel like it would be a good look. We'll stand out. People might come up to you, introduce themselves, or, you know, vice versa. And so that's my suggestion. I'm always flexible. Let's see. So, yeah, volunteering, the assignments are really basically the last little detail. We have gotten a bunch of questions. So, hey, I don't know if you want to touch base about that. We want to give a heads up to the president's office. So just touch base about how we want to organize that. I did want to, you know, present them, unless there's something totally off the wall, present them verbatim. But we can organize them in themes to sort of make the list more skimmable. It's not a ton of questions, so I feel like it's really just a courtesy heads up. So.
Okay. I think it would be a good idea to present them so they have time to prepare them and give the most thorough and detailed answers to individuals. We can talk further about this offline if they have time. Is there anything else we all need to know about their staff, about the president's address to staff before we move on to the committee report?
No, we're good. Unless anybody has questions. If you can show up a few minutes early, well, we'll establish that with the assignments. That's what I'm thinking. But otherwise, we're good.
All right. Thank you so much, Carrie.
No problem.
All right. So I'm going to move on to the committee report, Communications and Awards Committee. Is there an update?
That was basically my update.
Committee? We'll be meeting next week. Okay, great. Welfare Committee, Transportation Committee, Benefits and Policy Committee.
Yes, I would like to thank Pam and the support staff who are online now, and we're expecting in the next 2 weeks. And also, I met with HR, and we talked about how the expectations of we negotiate things amongst each other before jumping to resolutions.
Yeah.
So we kind of established that, and hopefully I can meet in more people when we meet in the community.
Yeah. Nothing from the executive committee, elections committee. Laura's not here. So Laura, I believe you mentioned that you had.
I do want to be members of the private plan oversight committee. Met with four times a year. And just wanted to update you that Cat Trust, which is the entity that has the oversight, the committee has the oversight of our retirement plan nationwide. Cat Trust is the advisor. They are now monitoring the retirement plan for the first time, and they did recommend a couple of things from information from people's retirement assets. If this goes through, would be mapped onto the equivalent fund, which is not very good, but you might see those decisions coming to you as well.
For this time,
I don't believe so. I believe it's well for now. I think that's what I'm looking
well as the structure.
Any other questions?
I was going to just, excuse me, I may have missed it, but could you take me to the...
Yeah, I already did. Roll call? Well, I already wrote it down.
Okay.
All right. We have about 5 minutes now. Is there any new business that anybody wants to discuss before we adjourn? Christy?
So my question would be, back to the about an hour of the presentation, and what is the takeaway? What is our consumption of that? How will that benefit the employee body at large? What are we going to do with the information gained? How is that hour valuable into the larger context of our job?
I was hoping that this presentation could help everybody get a sense of what are some initiatives, what are some priorities for the university. Somebody has a question of, I see a lot of capital projects happening, but I don't see any sort of adjustments to, salary increases. Maybe it would be a good opportunity to say, okay, this is, what I've learned from this presentation from Paul, and also this isn't going to be the only time that Paul presents. We are going to have other opportunities to kind of ask additional questions. I think that a lot of individuals from the retreat seem to have questions about the budget, and I was hoping that this would be a good opportunity for people to ask those questions to somebody like Paul Streeter. I think that it's just important to have these conversations to learn more and then to grow your breadth of knowledge to answer constituents when they do have questions, which might not arise as often, but I really was hoping that this was going to be a good opportunity to ask these questions to somebody in budgeting and planning that might be able to answer in an informed and structured way. Even though I don't think that we have enough time to do that, I think that there will be other opportunities.
I follow up to that. Yeah. I think it would be really helpful if we could receive a copy of the presentation prior to the meeting. Yeah. That way we can read through it and know what to expect, and if we have questions, we can kind of formulate them in advance, and it can be more of a back and forth discussion rather than just learning the information and supposing to have to comment and question on it at the same time.
So I actually have asked for this presentation weeks in advance, and I just got it this morning, which is going to provide me with much time to advise people of about. I agree. I think next time it would be important to push for that material beforehand. But
I felt sort of the same way with the last presentation we had on this East Campus or North Campus expansion, that we didn't have a lot of information going into it, so didn't really have time to formulate those questions.
That's a good point, and I think that will be helpful as I connect with other resources that have all the information so that we can prepare better questions and really make this a very helpful discussion. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's kind of sort of related, and maybe we don't need to address it now because it might be a lot of questions. But at the retreat, very often there's a set, I see that your school is not representative. Very often there's a set that we don't direct the intent. We're not, that we shouldn't feel that we are representing our constituents. And so, she said that we should think of ourselves as a conduit for, gathering sort of information and whatever. And I sort of like at a loss as a new member of this body to how to connect with my constituents, and I'd like to find out from everybody else what it is that they do in order to gather this information, to connect, to reach out, and how that information is kind of filtered through. Because I don't ordinarily just connect with the body of staff, the IMR school. And so it would be very useful for me to have some kind of background of what people have done and what have done. So I assume that school name is Walnut. Just recently, I had everyone gather,
Typically, I try to find new members when the apology does, you know, in the introduction. I try to reach out to the new employees to kind of get a sense of what everybody was, you know, questions about what, you know, kind of resources would be helpful for them. So I try just to reach out and spread the information that I have available to constituents. And they don't necessarily have to be less than 5 years, but if anybody I interact with who might have questions about the EA, I just try to inform them and that's kind of what I do for my
part.
And it is flawed, I'm sorry, but I do try to do outreach, but it's not easy. I know that Ellen has had the same question of how do you reach, you know, non-exempt workers. They're broad across campus, and I think some of it and what Mary was saying is that it is pretty much very difficult to do something on such a broad level, I think, within your local communities and your resources. I think it's try to do as much outreach as possible, but that's only in my opinion. Yeah.
So, if I may, so, she gave us the comment, like that comment. So the actual representative comment for that. So I say yes or yes and no. I think she's trying to help us out, not like even guilty if we don't, we feel very like, I don't know, Alex down the hall, we're not representing all. You know, like, so you're, now you're confused, it's like, we don't represent any of her, you know. So just be yourself and kind of, you know, you don't have to represent every single person that you know. You know, you can at least represent the twice of like certain kind of amount of people in this case, and all of us, there's so many of us. Hopefully we can complete that. Okay? So I kind of say I am a representative and I am representing, but not every single person.
Okay.
So that's
okay.
I guess my life, the way I view it, is starting small. Just coming back and talking to your workers about things that you've been doing in the employee assembly. If you're in kind of a meeting after 5 minutes, if you know any of the meetings that you're at. I mean, I'm IT research and tech transfer. Research and tech transfer. I get to find like the town hall that I can go and say, hey, everybody, I'm first. And I think that is ambitious on the Mary side of like, don't try to necessarily be that person. But even in talking to somebody like the student Paul, I was able at least to say as an IT representative, like, is there a way to change the language about us IT being the cost and experience of it? And he at least seemed to make a nod and said, well, I'll try to adjust that. And that way, I at least represented like a broad group of people and we'll see what happens. But so far, it's been successful kind of trying to find meetings here and there. But like the, you know, I haven't found the basement full of the tech fans. You know, what do you guys actually do it? So I think to all of us, especially the newer people, just the small wins, like say, you can bring back some of these things that you remember and explain. And then, you know, later on, like in CRC, we have a town hall, so that at some point in time, I would be able to help you see that. But, yeah, the university wide thing. But even, you know, wearing your shirt once in a while, does it say that's cool you're employed as somebody for this person? That's been working so far. Like, I don't feel so bad that I didn't find the, like, last 10,000 people at the time.
All right, and final comment from Ellen, and then we run out of time.
Oh. I think that it's important that you like learn as much as you can from the respect you can, and that way you have those resources for what people do. I had someone come to me during the summer, when I really had no clue what I was doing, and they came to me with a question about benefits and policies, and I actually was able to go back to that person who came to me in the conference and said, yeah, I'll look into it. I was actually able to go back to her and invite her to join the new policy and benefit committee and see what we could get that bringing and be able to bring her into the conference. So it's just knowing what you think of it. So it does
Yeah, and if there are any presentations that you guys want or any sort of different structure that you want with these presentations, feel free to let me know and I will try to adjust with it and try to make it as productive as possible because I think a lot of these presentations are just provide information and helpful resources as well as possible. So keep me posted on any ideas that you guys might have. And with that, I would like to adjourn this meeting. Is there any defense?
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.